Welcome to ESIPE's Global Economy Podcast. My name is Frederik Eriksson, and today I'm talking to Erik van der Marel. Erik is a senior economist here at ESIPE and therefore a colleague of mine. And here at ESIPE, he leads a lot of the work that we do on services trade and digital trade, including the much quoted Digital Trade Restrictiveness Index that we launched in 2018. Erik is an economist and also consults for the World Bank and teaches at the ULB here in Brussels. Erik, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
I want us to start to talk about digital trade, an area where you've done a lot of work, analyses that are really at the frontier in advancing our knowledge about what is going on, both in the real economy and in digital trade policy. So I want to start by asking you, is it correct to say that we have, on the one hand, digital trade growing wonderfully at a breakneck pace? At the same time, we have a development where digital trade restrictions are also growing at a breakneck pace.
Yeah, that's true. So the two phenomena are increasing. First, as a general comment, I mean, trade flows over the years are fairly stable usually. So there is a really sort of a stable increase. And that increase is usually very incremental. But if you make a distinction between goods, services, and a lot of services are ICT-based and therefore digital trade, you see clear long-term differences between the two in the sense that ICT services are the fastest growing component of all types of trade flows, and then services, which are often traded over the internet, even though they might not always be ICT intensive or belonging to digital trade, and so therefore they are digital enabled trade. And then you have goods. And nowadays, goods are the slowest moving trade flow, but still growing, although there is a discussion, of course, they're petering out. But if you make a distinction between the three, then it is digital trade that is growing fastest. Yeah. ICT services in particular. At the same time, I mean, digital trade barriers or restrictions are growing as well. I mean, there are many other types of protectionist barriers that are growing, but digital trade barriers are growing fast too. So there is a two-way path of increase, both on the trade front and on the other hand, the barrier front, yeah.
So what is a digital trade barrier? I mean, we know about a trade barrier from the past, which is that you have a tariff. So if you import a good from another country, you put a tariff on it, which raises the cost and the price. But as you say, many of these digital trade flows or digitally enabled trade flows can be sort of something you do over the internet. It can be something you send in an email.
Yeah.
So how on earth is it possible to restrict that form of trade?
Yeah. That is very difficult. And I think one of the explanations for why ICT services are still growing fast is precisely they are done over the internet, which makes it very hard to regulate. I mean, we cannot apply a tariff on an item, a service that is traded over the internet, but we can do other stuff. We can do other or apply other restrictions. And that is not a tariff. That is in some cases a quota, which is more difficult, of course, even if you apply that in the case of services. But there are more complicated, what we call regulatory barriers that are applied behind the border. So they are not physically applied at the border, they are not collected at customs, but they are determined by governments, by regulators. For example, I mean, we still have monopolies, for example, in telecommunications in some countries. And applying a tariff on telecommunication service is not possible, but we can organize with laws and rules how competitive a telecommunication market is, whether we allow a second firm to enter the market, which might be domestic, whether we allow a third firm to enter the market, which might then, in other cases, a foreign firm. Now, the domestic telecommunication firm that has been there for 30, 40, 50 years doesn't like that, of course. Often, also in developing countries, these firms have a specific status, so they don't like competition, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so with all these rules that a government can apply, and also historical laws and regulations that have been there already in the first place, like many years ago, they're very hard to change. And that makes it that all of a sudden, in a world of trade, these rules and restrictions become a trade barrier. So that's a clear example of a digital trade type telecommunication service that is restricted from being traded by regulatory policies.
I've seen in your studies that you're talking about something called localization measures or restrictions that basically means that you have to do something local in the economy where your service is being sold or where you invest. What is that about?
So a lot of these services are traded over the internet. And if you say internet, you're immediately talking about the flow of data, basically. Now, I mean, the internet is data, but a lot of the services that are produced also use a lot of data, and that is moved around borders many times a day. Now, there are new types of emerging, what I would call new types of emerging regulatory barriers that localize that kind of data that is necessary for producing a service. In this case, not necessarily a telecommunication service, but other types of services. Think data processing service like Google or another company based in India, for example, that does business processing outsourcing. They need a certain type of data, and so that data needs to flow across borders. Some countries do not like that, and so what they impose is another regulatory law or a regulatory rule where they say that data that comes from my domestic constituency, my domestic consumers, the people that live in my country, that data cannot flow outside my borders. And so that is a clear regulatory barrier that localizes the data that comes from you and I, or that comes from firms with which other services providers can provide a service or can produce and provide a service and then trade and export that service. Now, if you localize that kind of data, then effectively the tradability of that service becomes impossible or more difficult. Now, there is, of course, a big discussion whether that is discriminatory. That is a legal discussion. But in economic sense, I mean, we at eCyber have proven that that can be indeed inhibiting to international trade in services. Yeah.
Mm. So when we look around the world, do we see a pattern of digital trade restrictions and digital openness, if we look at the other side of the ledger, that is similar in the sense that all countries basically do the same type of thing? So do we see big variations between countries in how they regulate digital trade?
Yeah, you see clear patterns emerging. I mean, what you see is that some richer OECD type of countries are fairly open regarding digital trade. I mean, there are pickpockets where they still apply restrictions. But overall, if you compare this set of countries with other types of countries, like emerging developing countries outside the club of the OECD, then you see that these countries are more restricted. That is not a surprise, because if you look, for example, at the category of services regulation as such, like non-digital services regulations, these countries also tend to be relatively more restricted compared to developed OECD kind of countries. That is one conclusion. The other conclusion, which I find interesting, is that it's also the smaller, richer countries. So in addition of being rich, it's also that you're small, which predicts that you're often very open to digital trade. Now, from an economic sense, it's not a surprise. That is not a surprise, because smaller countries are often very services-oriented compared to bigger countries, which are still very focused on manufacturing trade because of economies of scale. And so it makes it logical from an economic perspective that these countries like Luxembourg, Holland, or Iceland, for example, are fairly open to digital trade. And there is a third factor that plays a role as well. It's not only the richer countries and the smaller countries. It's often also the countries that are far away from a gravitational center like European market or the NAFTA kind of economy, or the old NAFTA, or the Southeast Asian regional bloc. So you see there, I mean, these are, if you take these three sort of regional blocs as a gravitational center of economic activity, it's the countries that are relatively further away from these gravitational centers that also tend to be more open, like New Zealand, like Iceland, that is further away from the European single market. And so, and the explanation there is that, well, if you look at the goods trade that these countries need to, you know, pay for, that is relatively costly for them because these goods need to be shipped overseas. And so that makes it that trade in goods for these countries is relatively expensive. But for services, given that they are traded over the internet, it makes sense for them to have these trade barriers going down, so being reduced. And so, yeah, that's the economic explanation behind it. So it's the countries that are rich, the countries that are relatively small, having a smaller market size, and the countries that are relatively geographical, far away from the rest of the world, that are mostly less restricted in digital trade compared to China, for example, compared to Turkey, compared to India. These countries are often more restricted.
And I suppose we're also talking about countries being more open that perhaps have a tradition of institutions and policies generally being more open to trade or economic exchange with other parts of the world.
Yeah, absolutely. So what we know is that if you look at other parts of the of international trade flows, so as you said, like international trade in goods very much depends on tariff. International trade in services depends on other types of regulatory barriers, which are set up by governments, of course, but in large part also are set up by regulators. Now, how smart these regulatory policies are set in order to, you know, protect a single part or a part of the economy, or to protect people that are relatively poor, cannot afford a service. I mean, that requires a smart regulator, if you want, or a smart government or a subset of government, which we call regulator, in order to set these regulatory policies that are not trade restrictive, but still protect those people who cannot afford a particular service. In digital trade, that's also the case. So you need to have smart regulators, good regulators, qualitatively a good institutional framework that set up these rules, because we need rules in an economy in a market, but do it in a smart way that they do not become trade distortive. So the quality of a government, or what we call in economics domestic institutions, or what I would call regulator, also plays a very important role. Yeah.
Hmm. Do we know if there is a difference in the economic consequences, or perhaps economic damages, that are being created by digital trade barriers? Are there some barriers that are more damaging than others that countries really, really should avoid doing if they want to prosper on the back of economic exchange with other parts of the world?
Yeah, there are clear differences. And these differences are a bit nuanced, I would say. So you mentioned the Digital Trade Restrictiveness Index that we have developed. In that DTRI, we have one particular chapter that deals with the regulatory barriers regarding data. Now, and we have categorized those. We have categorized those along the lines of those regulatory barriers that really inhibit the cross-border flow of data, and all the rest of the regulatory barriers that are more dealing with how we deal with data domestically once that data is behind the border in the market. So these are what I would call domestic regulatory barriers regarding data. Now, there is a clear distinction if you look at the two categories, because the latter category, the ones that deal with the domestic regulatory barriers, how we deal with data inside an economy, have a more pronounced, more important impact on productivity, firm level productivity. And these productivity is one of the most important indicators of economic growth. And we know that this type of barriers are having a more important impact on productivity. And then we are talking about data retention, DPOs, data processing officers, the obligation to have one, and other what we call administrative barriers. Data localization, a local storage requirement, which was the first category, have a relatively less pronounced or significant impact on productivity. That story is reversed when we look at international trade in services. That's when we assess these barriers with international trade and services, we see that precisely data localization, a local storage requirement, or a very strict conditional flow regime is significantly burdensome for international trade in digital services. So that is an important policy message, I would say. So if you are concerned with international trade flows in services that you want to stimulate, then being a smart regulator means that you should not imply data localization laws. I mean, but if you are very much concerned with the privacy of the consumer that you have inside a country, then other administrative types of domestic barriers becomes more important. And also, perhaps for the regulator, opens up more leeway to set policies there the way you want, so you have more leeway, knowing that these policies still have an impact on productivity, but you would like to guarantee some safety nets for domestic consumers. You know, I mean, people are concerned with privacy, or people are concerned with national security. Then a regulator has more leeway there to do something in terms of policy regarding its policy framework, if it has the priority to benefit from international trade. So again, if you're a small country, for example, you know that a lot of growth is coming from your in your market coming from international trade, you would think twice to implement a localization barrier, data localization barrier. But it doesn't mean that you cannot do nothing. I mean, given that the other types of regulatory barriers have less or no impact on international trade and services, you're more inclined to change or to set the rules there where they do not have an impact on international trade, which are in our case domestic regulatory barriers. So there is a clear distinction, I would say, between the two types of restrictions regarding regarding data.
Mm. And if we take this discussion specifically to Europe, including both what we talked about when it comes to digital trade, digital openness and digital restrictions, and the capacity to generate productivity growth or generate economic output on the back of the integration you have across borders that is digital enabled. Do we see any interesting patterns here in Europe? I would suppose sort of that, as you said, I mean, small, rich countries will perhaps be more open than larger countries in Europe would be.
Yeah,
I suppose that the general openness in the services sector would have an effect as well. Is that true?
I would expect so. Yeah, of course. I mean, if you think about the telecommunication market, which, I mean, in Europe is fairly liberalized, of course. But, I mean, the ones who are very good at providing that telecommunication service, which is basically the infrastructure of a lot of digital trade that is happening, that, of course, has a knock-on effect of how competitive you are in all the other parts of digital trade outside telecommunication. And so on and so on. I mean, of course, I mean, think about business services that are also traded over the internet and that are becoming increasingly what we call digitalized, ICT intense, are using a lot of digital technologies. Yeah, the countries that allow that process to go on fastest or earliest or in a more profound way are benefiting most, of course, of that type of trade, because also a lot of business services are already traded over the internet, but we'll do that in a more and more ICT-intensive way as well in the future. And so the ones who are having their regulatory framework right now set in a good way are the ones that are benefiting most regarding trade and productivity. Yeah,
You have in a recent study pointed to the fact that we see sectoral differences when it comes to, in the first place, digitalization, and in the second place, their ability to generate positive productivity contributions to the economy. What are the main differences between sectors, and why do we have these differences?
So, I mean, again, I mean, in large part, we stick to a services framework. I mean, because that's, I think, where the study was focused on, and that's where the action, I think, takes place also in the future regarding digital trade. It doesn't mean that digital goods are not important, but it's mostly for now a services story. Services are very heterogeneous. I mean, you have one services market that is, for example, as I said, business services, but you also have transport services, and you have other types of services that differ from one market to another. And they differ in a sense of how competitive they are. They differ in a sense of how much regulated they are, whether they were state supplied in the past, but also how, what I would call, how distorted they are. So how much they are concentrated by a few very big firms that take almost all of the revenue in that firm. And then you have what we call a long tail of small other firms that, you know, can take the rest of the market, basically. That type of market structure is not very beneficial for generating productivity benefits. That is not only in services, that is everywhere. So also in agriculture and goods. You need to have a nicely distributed way of firms that are active in the market, that generate, I mean, not in an equal way productivity or market revenue or economic activity in the market, because you always have the bigger ones that generate most, but it needs to be what we call less distortive. So it shouldn't be that only a few firms have most of the market and then the rest not. It needs to be more equally distributed. Now, you can measure that in various ways, etc. But think about that, that it's that the market then is optimally structured rather than concentrated and distorted. That makes a difference in terms of how then these smaller firms, and also the bigger firms, but in particular the smaller firms, are incentivized to pick up digital technologies. So that is A, one thing. So one block of the argument there. The second block of the argument is, yeah, well, okay, you might have these distorted market structures, which in great extent might be inherent to the services market or might be inherent to, for reasons of history, you know, I mean, think again back in the telecommunication market. But another part is, of course, policies. Again, if your policy framework has been set up in the past in a very distorted manner, then inevitably you also get a distorted market. And that prevents it from, you know, these firms from picking up these digital technologies. So it's not that, oh, the markets are distorted and services are a bit awkward next to goods and therefore we cannot do anything. No, you can also implement smart, again, regulatory policies. You can support competition. You can policy optimize the market structure of a services sector, and so in consequence stimulate the digital pickup by all types of firms active in the market, which in the end will stimulate productivity growth.
So when we're looking then at sector performance, are there specific sector that, you know, spring to mind that have been successful in digitalizing their services, and as a consequence of that perhaps had a good pattern of competition and generating more productivity growth, and other sectors that surprises you in the sense that not much have happened at all?
Yeah, so not surprising, of course. I mean, information services has experienced a tremendous productivity increase, which, I mean, again, is unsurprising if you look at all the digital firms that are active nowadays. And that's only a good thing, I think. And that's indeed where you see in the analysis and research that we are doing that these markets are fairly well structured, if you put that next to a very competitive market like the manufacturing sector. So things are nicely organized and distributed there in such a market. The other side is where it is not so much well structured is, for example, business services, and then in particular professional services. And that is surprising because in the past, we trade economists sort of knew, sort of guessed, or sort of saw in the trade data that that is the most dynamic sector of the economy. Like 20 years ago, we saw that trade was fastest moving in this type of services, business services, professional services, like consultancy services, lawyer services, marketing services, etc., etc., architectural services. But that is not the case anymore. And that is not the case anymore because of that story that I told before, that the market is not well organized, it's distorted. A lot of these firms are very much protected by licenses, by other types of regulatory barriers that inhibit firms from exporting their service in the first place, but also reaping good productivity effects and also picking up digital technologies. A lot of these firms do not, like smaller firms, players in this business services market, do not use digital technologies such as big data, automatic processing with suppliers, etc. But it's the bigger firms who do that, which is a good thing. But I mean, if you only have two, three very big firms in your market that do all the, you know, all the business, and these are the ones that often do have the digital technologies, it does not really trickle down to the rest of your market. And so that trickle down is important because we all need to benefit from productivity, from growth of a market, so that all our services become affordable for everyone and become more qualitatively better.
I want to end talking a little bit about EU policy and developments we see on the policy front here in Europe right now. So I think it's fair to say that there is an underlying assumption in the way many policymakers think about digitalization, the future of digital competitiveness here in Europe, that Europe hasn't really missed the boat. It's not that, but there is an assumption that we haven't prospered that much. And many of the big firms that are active in this area, Apple, Amazon, Google, etc., they are American, and therefore America prospers so much more than Europe does on the back of digitalization. Now, we know, of course, that you can't really apply that type of framework if you want to understand economic benefits being generated by a new technology. But the underlying trend seemed to be that Europe is going to become a little bit more restrictive and perhaps regulate a bit more when it comes to access to the European market. I know that you're not a supporter of that type of policy, but what is it that Europe should do instead if we want sort of to get more economic bang for all the bucks that we are investing in digital infrastructure, in networks, human capital, etc.? What could Europe do more in order to generate sort of the economic dynamism that I suppose we all want?
The short answer is make your internal market most effective as possible. I mean, a lot of it depends on your domestic market and also what some economists or ICT economists say the size of your market. It is no surprise that, for example, precisely the China and US are very strong in a lot of these services that you mentioned or sectors that you mentioned, like Apple, Google, and all the rest of these kind of firms. Because those are large markets where there is a lot of economies of scale and where these network externalities, network effects, can generate a lot of activity in those sectors. And so therefore, these sectors in these two countries are very successful. So it's rather the size of the market that make these kind of companies very successful. Now, of course, we have Germany and France that are very nice big markets, but not big enough. So if you set that, compare these two countries, I mean, the fact that these two countries, China and the US, have such a successful firms comes from the fact, or what we think, is the market size. And so, I mean, it's no surprise then. It's unsurprising that one policy advice that, you know, you could then say to the European Commission is, you know, finish your digital single market, finish your market for services, because that's where the big bang of the buck will be created. That's where you will be, you know, benefit the most regarding future developments of where the economy is going. People know that there, of course. I mean, people know that that is beneficial, but it's difficult to implement because, yeah, for reasons that we know. But that's first and foremost, I think, the priority that should be there. And as a consequence, I'm convinced that if your internal structure, your internal market is good and solid and big enough, then you're also stronger externally with those countries that you deal with. I mean, either in a bilateral framework, setting free trade agreements or other types of trade agreements, or in a multilateral framework. So what you do internally has repercussions what you do externally. So the stronger you are domestically, the stronger you are externally.
And what about services? Do we also need to have new policies opening up the services markets in Europe if we're going to prosper from all the investments that we're doing in digital capacities, networks, human capital?
Absolutely. So the digital single market is important, of course, because it needs to thrive. You have to have that skill. But these digital tools, instruments, and technologies are an important input for the rest of the economy, and in great part, services. And so you also need to liberalize your services. You also need to finish your services market, your European single market for services, because that will only reinforce other sectors in the economy. So once you have done the digital part, it will reinforce your services part. It makes it much more competitive. And that in turn will reinforce your manufacturing sector, because in turn we know that a lot of services are used as inputs for the manufacturing sector that makes the manufacturing sector a lot more productive. So there's a clear trickle-down effect, I would say, where the three different sectors mutually reinforce each other to gain higher productivity benefits. So it's extremely important. Knowing that a lot of these services are already ICT intensive, but not to the fullest potential because of reasons that we discussed. But if you unleash that potential within the European single market, they are much more inclined to pick up digital technologies. They are much more inclined to do so with a single digital single market. that has overall benefits for the wider economy, like for manufacturing, for agriculture, for services themselves. And so therefore, it becomes important to do that both ideally at the same time.
All right. Many thanks, Eric. Let's hope that policymakers in Europe will listen and pursue that type of policy agenda. Thank you so much.
Thank you.